Chapter 10. Ebal the sentry brought the message to Daniel one sultry August morning, a single sentence scratched on a fragment of broken pottery. "Your grandmother is dying," and signed Simon. The message had been in Ebal's pocket for 3 days, no knowing how many times it had changed hands before reaching him. Better if it had never reached him at all, Daniel thought fiercely, thrusting it deep into his girdle pocket. For half the day he carried it about with him, saying nothing, the bit of clay weighing heavier and heavier till it dragged at him like a stone. Finally he showed the message to Rosh, and set off down the mountain to the village. The door of his grandmother's house was bolted, and only silence answered his knock. As he stood uncertain in the road before the house, two women and then a feeble old man came hurrying from the nearest house. "About time you came," one of the women scolded. "They've been locked in there for 10 days. We don't know whether the old woman is alive or dead." "Why didn't you break in?" Daniel asked. "The girl is possessed of devils," the old man answered. "She will let nobody come near her." "We tossed bread through the window," a woman added, "but I'll have no more to do with it. Suppose the devils were let loose." "My sister is harmless," Daniel told them impatiently. "She could hurt no one." But probably none of them had even glimpsed his sister in all these years. He could see that he could expect no help from them. He looked up at the small high window, then he wrenched a portion of the ladder from the wall, braced it, and tried to peer into the house. He could see nothing but a patch of floor. There was no sound, but just as he turned away, he thought he caught the flicker of a shadow. "Leah," he called softly at first, then insistently, "it's Daniel, your brother. Let me in." The shadow did not move again. Panic crept over him. What horror did that room contain? With all his heart, he longed to run from this silent house, yet the fearful, demanding eyes of the three neighbors goaded him on. He had no choice. He would have to break down the door and go in. At the second thrust of his powerful shoulders, the hinges burst from the rotting frame, and he fell forward into the foul-smelling darkness. Sunlight poured in behind him, lighting up a crouching figure with a mass of tangled yellow hair. For an instant, Leah's eyes stared wildly from an ashen face. Then she darted away and coiled into a tight ball of fear against the wall. Where the girl had crouched, on a pallet of straw, lay a shrunken gray shape. Dread froze Daniel on the threshold. Then, to his shattering relief, his grandmother slowly turned her head. "Daniel, you've come," she whispered. They were the last words he was ever to hear from her. Daniel drove away the two curious women and sent the old man for the doctor. He kicked the door all the way open and let fresh air into the damp, fetid room. He threw out the rat-gnawed loaves of bread that littered the floor. The doctor bent over the old woman and shook his head. "Only her will has kept the life in her," he said. "She has waited till you came. Let her go now, poor soul. Look to your sister instead and see that she eats." Daniel had no knowledge of nursing. Clumsily, he spread a fresh bed of rushes and shifted the weightless old body. He walked to the well and filled the jar with water, and bathed the hands thin and dry as shriveled leaves. One of the neighbors called from the roadway and handed him a bowl full of broth and a clay dish of hot coals to light a fire. He piled straw into the hollow of the floor and built a fire against the damp. He tried to coax the old woman to take a sip of the broth. In all this time, Leah had not moved from the wall. Once or twice, from the corner of his eyes, he noticed that she had very slightly turned her head, and he suspected that she watched him from behind the tangled hair. He tried not to look at her, to crowd back the fear that rose in him at the sight of her disheveled figure. She had been shut in here in the dimness for 10 days. Had the devils taken possession of her altogether? Daniel went out into the garden and milked the little goat awkwardly. The feel of it gradually coming back into his hands, he carried the jar of milk into the house and set it on a shelf. The goat followed him through the broken door, sniffing timidly at the unfamiliar smell of him. Daniel was reminded that the door must be mended before it was too dark to see. The goat circled the room and found Leah, and he saw her hand go out and her fingers grip the black fur. Night was coming on. He mended the door after a fashion and propped it against the frame. Then he discovered that there was no oil in the lamp. How many nights had they gone without a light? He had not thought to ask Rosh for money, and though it was too dark now to search the room, he doubted there would be a single coin hidden there. Just as darkness fell, there was a timid knock on the door. The second neighbor, the one who had most feared the devils, held out to him a small saucer of oil with a flaming wick. He accepted the lamp with shame. Through all these years, when he had thought of the village, he had remembered the poverty, the dinginess, the quarreling, and meanness and despair. He had forgotten there was kindness, too. He put the lamp on the floor and sat down near his grandmother's mat. He was all at once very tired, more tired than after a day at the forge or a long hunt over the mountain. Dread began to creep along his nerves again. He knew he was terribly afraid to spend the night in this place. Rosh was right. There was a weakness in him, that devil of fear that held his sister helpless. Was it cunning enough to find out his weakness? If he could run out into the street, back to the mountain, he could never overtake him. But he could not run. He could only sit while the fear reached closer and closer, hemming in a small circle of light that held it at bay. Sometimes his grandmother stirred, the thin, wrinkled eyelids opened, and the faded eyes groped toward him. If he spoke to her, she closed her eyes again, satisfied. How had she been so sure that he would come? What had he ever done for her that she would dare to believe he would come back? He wished now he could tell her why he had run away. He wished that he could explain about Rosh, could let her know that it was for her, too, that he worked on the mountain. But it was too late for that. The only thing he could do was to sit here beside her, to let her be sure that he was there. Perhaps if she could hear him, she would not have to make such an effort to see. He began to talk, as he had talked that night to Samson while he filed off the chains, not knowing whether anyone heard or understood, but out of some need in himself. "You thought I had forgotten," he said. "But I remember how it used to be when Leah and I first came to live with you. Your hair was still so black, Grandmother. You worked in the Ketza field that summer, but at night you used to tell us stories." There was no sound, not from the still figure or from the corner, but was it his imagination that a faint softening, almost like a smile, relaxed the thin, tight lips? He went on talking. "You were the one who told me the story of Daniel, the prophet I was named for. How when Daniel refused to stop praying to his God, Darius cast him into a den of lions, and how God sent an angel and shut the lions' mouths, and Daniel was not hurt. And about the three men who walked in the fiery furnace, and not a hair of their heads was singed. I can remember their names still, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I used to like the sound of them. You made me feel proud of being named Daniel." There was a faint stir in the corner. Daniel did not turn his head. He went on talking. "At night, before we went to sleep, you made us repeat a psalm after you. I have forgotten them now, but there's one I think I could remember, the one you liked best." He fumbled for the words, and they came slowly from the depths of his memory. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake." There was a hesitant footstep beside him, not knowing what to do, not daring to look up. With the cold prickle of fear along his skin, Daniel held out his hand. He felt Leah's fingers touch his own. He forced himself to go on. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Leah sank down beside him. Side by side, without speaking, the brother and sister sat and listened to the breathing of the old woman. Leah's hand in his own was like the hand of a small child reaching out to him in trust and helplessness. It was a sign that even now the devils did not have complete dominion. Fear retreated into the shadowy corners. There were only the small sounds, the hiss of the wick in the saucer of oil, the wheezing and sighing of the sleeping goat, the ceaseless rustling in the thatch overhead where countless small creatures nestled in the molding straw. Once the thin thread of a snake swung down, twisted back on itself, and disappeared. A rat came out of the shadows, sat on its haunches, and glared at them. Leah looked at both without surprise or alarm. Sometime in the night, he was aware that one sound in the room had ceased. His grandmother was no longer breathing.